Fletcher and Pakel versus Stemke.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
I am William Knowles. I represent Fletcher and Pakel.
Okay.
And I had to be corrected several times before I got it right. As the appellant in this matter, with me today is Mr. Bowman, and back in the back is Melissa White, who helped with the brief. We're here to challenge, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. We're here to challenge several trial court orders and believe the trial court erred in basically three areas. When it applied the wrong legal standard in determining whether or not to give a spoliation instruction to the jury. Number two, when it failed to grant directed verdict as to the personal property damage claim, the real property damage claim, and the CPA claim. And then lastly, if we get past directed verdict, whether the court erred when it disallowed our damages expert to testify as to the value of the personal property and the real property damage. We are asking that you direct verdict on the CPA personal property and real property claim, as I'll explain later. In the alternative, this should be referred back to trial, and the judge should be told that to apply the correct standard in determining whether spoliation instruction should be given to the jury. We believe that instruction should be given.
So what was the wrong standard that you are arguing the court used?
The
spoliation.
Yes, there's two different orders that were issued by the court. The first by the judge that was assigned to the matter before we reached trial, and then the actual trial judge. Both judges were given an opportunity, and the standard applied was if we can't prove that they intentionally destroyed evidence, we are not entitled to the instruction. That flies directly in the face of Washington law. Of course, if they intentionally destroyed, we get probably a greater sanction than just an instruction. But the case that's controlling on the spoliation is the Homeworks case. Both sides have relied on it in their brief. But Homeworks says it's not just intentional that you look at. You have to look at the importance of the evidence and the culpability of the party. And here, Your Honors, we have an insurance company who was prosecuting a subrogation claim. They knew they had a duty to preserve the evidence, and they did not.
And your authority for the imposition of the duty is what?
I cited Homeworks, but Homeworks, I believe, cites to a case, I believe, Henderson's, a Supreme Court decision, state Supreme Court decision, that set the standards. Homeworks applied it, but it's interesting, in the context of Homeworks' case, they refused. The court said it's not applicable to the entities that was the target of the attempted spoliation relief, because that party did not control the evidence. In our case, Unitrin, the insurer, and the homeowner controlled the evidence. They controlled the contractor. They controlled the experts. An expert came in the day after the fire and determined that the dryer was the cause of the fire and did not preserve the vent. Exiting the dryer, did not preserve the vent that exited the house. Excuse me. Did not preserve the...
Well, you're arguing that. I mean, that goes to the importance of the evidence.
Yes.
I was asking really about what case you're relying on that imposes a duty under the circumstances that were presented in this case. And I thought you mentioned two things. One, just the general duty because they were on the scene. But then the second was based on... I forget the name of the document, but there was a firefighter's or fire investigator's manual that the duty was based on.
Well, I think the court can look to the NFPA 921 as a guideline, and in fact, their expert cites that as a guideline. It's not mandatory to follow it, but the way a fire investigation goes is you walk into a burned out area and you have to go from possibilities to probabilities.
Well, and I think Homeworks talks about that because there's a different duty as to potential evidence, isn't there?
Yes, there is. But at the point in time, if you go back and you look at the record, Unitrin's expert on the day after the fire determined that it was the dryer that they thought was the cause of the fire.
Right.
Preserve that, did they not? Didn't they preserve the dryer?
They preserved the dryer, but the vent they did not preserve. And this is very important because it goes to the CPA claim. The CPA claim is premised on the absence of a sensor in the dryer that would tell them that the vent was blocked with lint. They didn't preserve the vent. We don't know that it was blocked, yet their CPA claim is premised on the fact that it was blocked and it caused the fire. Unitrim destroys the evidence and then affirmatively claims that evidence supports a CPA claim. That evidence is not in the record. They cannot have it both ways. They cannot destroy the evidence and then use it affirmatively. Another area where they destroyed the evidence or altered.
You say vent, you're talking about the ventilation system, is that what you mean?
Yes. Okay. What we know from the evidence was that there, from behind the dryer, there's a vent that goes to the vent that's actually in the house, part of the fixture. Here, that fixture was a landscape pipe, a black landscape pipe. It was not a proper vent.
And that evidence was before the jury, wasn't it?
That evidence was, but what was inside the vent was not. If it's blocked, then the absence of the sensor matters. But if it's not blocked, it doesn't matter. The only evidence in the record as to what the condition of the vent was a testimony of Cheryl Stremke, who said, I vacuumed that vent every 2 weeks. So if it's not blocked, if it's cleaned every 2 weeks, how could there be a CPA claim based upon the fact that it did block and there was no warning or sensor to the operator to tell them not to operate the dryer? The other part of the spoliation aspect of this claim that's very troubling is the way it was used affirmatively by Unitrin at trial. After the fire and after my client was finally given an opportunity to see the dryer, there is a thermostat in the dryer itself. It's like this pin. When the thermostat pops, that part pops out. The pictures taken at the point of inspection of the product show the great amount of lint built up on that, which would indicate that it popped cycles and cycles and cycles. If it pops, there's no energy. If there's no energy, there's no spark. There's no way this could have caused the fire.
And that was before the jury, was it not?
That was before the jury, but we were not given the instruction. And when we attempted to argue to the jury that the buildup of the lint occurred over a great deal of time, Unitrin's response was, well, we shook it when we moved it around after the fire. That's what caused the displacement of the lint. Therefore, don't consider that solid evidence. We needed the instruction to say, if you spoil the evidence, it is presumed, you presume to use that, not use that evidence in favor of the person that spoils the evidence. But here they spoiled the evidence. They hide behind it. They say, well, we did that after the fire. That means the thermostat was not popped, that the system was energized, and it could cause the fire, when, in fact, the physical evidence said otherwise. So they use that affirmatively. They spoil the evidence affirmatively and use it to their advantage or disadvantage at the time of trial, and we can't have the benefit of the instruction. This is where there's error, and we're substantially prejudiced by this, their destruction of the evidence. I see that my time's up. I would like to address whatever issues I can at rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you reserved 4 minutes, did you not?
Two minutes. Good morning. May it please the court. Dan Lindahl on behalf of the plaintiffs. In the 10 minutes I have, I expect to principally address the spoliation issue since it's been the focus of both the briefing and the argument today. To the extent there's time, we'll touch on the other issues. And there were a couple comments by counsel that I want to make sure to
respond. Well, and in the context of spoliation, I think there's also been the argument about the CPA claim. So if you could address that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I hope to do that. I will do that. First of all, with respect to spoliation, as the judge pointed out, the dryer was preserved here. This case is all about whether the fire started in the dryer and why. That evidence was preserved. The things that were not preserved were deemed irrelevant. And I'm going to say two words right now, two words that that I haven't seen mentioned once in their briefing, nor have they been mentioned today. Fritz Wininger, City of Kent Fire Department investigator. He was there on the night of the fire, the very first person to come in and inspect the site. And he ruled out every item, every possible cause that Fisher and Peichel now speculates might have been the cause of the fire. So when they say, let's keep in mind what spoliation is. Spoliation is, I know this piece of evidence is harmful to my case, so I'm going to get rid of it so that it's not here. That's not what happened here. The evidence that went away, if it was evidence at all, was evidence that had been deemed irrelevant by both the investigating fire department official as well as independent experts. But let's say, let's give them the benefit of the doubt that the trial court, I want to mention this too, because there's a fight about it in the briefing. This is an abuse of discretion standard of review, because we're talking about whether the court should or should not have instructed the jury. Henderson and every other case that deals with this issue in that context says it's abuse of discretion.
Well, you'll agree if the court was wrong on the law in terms of why it refused to give the instruction, that would be de novo, would it not?
If the court made a legal error, yes. I mean, that's so let's look at the record here. Did the court have a basis to exercise its discretion to not give this instruction?
Let me ask you, in connection with your previous comment, did the court rely on whether or not the instruction was intentional in deciding whether or not to give this instruction? And if so, would that have been the incorrect standard to apply?
Well, the destruction of the evidence has to be intentional, and it has to be purposeful. It has to be either I intentionally destroy this thing or I consciously, with the knowledge that this evidence would be harmful to my case, I allow it to be destroyed or I intend for it to be destroyed. It isn't, because that all goes to the culpability. It goes to the very justification for the spoliation instruction. If there's no wrongdoing, if the evidence gets destroyed because this house has been sitting there for 6 weeks and it's time to start rebuilding because these people are living in a motel, that's not conscious disregard. It's not an intentional destruction. It's simply the fact, the passage of time, as with, in the Homeworks construction case, the people wanted to rebuild their home and they set about the project of rebuilding it, which brings up, time's moving fast here, so I want to touch on a couple important points. Fisher and Peichel knew about this fire no later than August 5. The fire occurred on the evening of July 1. No later than August 5, and probably earlier. The letter to them was dated July 21st. The jury was instructed no later than August 5 they had it. Demolition didn't begin sooner than August 14. Fisher and Peichel had several weeks there to take some action, preserve the property. We want to come see it. We want to come see it today. They never did any of that. And in the Homeworks construction case, where the defendant only had a few days to act, the court said, you need to act. You need to act swiftly. Henderson case, too. The car sat around for a long time. The Marshall case with the treadmill, they didn't ask for years. Fisher and Peichel.
If you're following this right, there's the argument that they raise is one that kind of requires a lot of attention to the technical details of how the fire happened, and that an important piece of evidence was Ms. Stemke's testimony that she vacuumed it on a regular basis, and therefore a scenario that had been previously plausible was no longer plausible. I don't know when that piece of evidence came in, so I wondered if you could respond to that. And the other question I have is they're concerned not only about the failure to give the instruction, but the argument that acted as if there was absolutely no concern at all about evidence having been lost.
Well, the venting, the way that figures in is we know that the heating element inside this dryer was overheating. We know that because it was examined. It was distorted. It had failed. Overheating can happen for any number of reasons. Low airflow over the heating element can be one cause. Now, We don't know whether the low airflow over this heating element was because of ventilation or because of lint buildup inside the dryer or for some other reason. The experts don't know and said it didn't matter because low airflow over the heating element is an expected event with a dryer. So what we are concerned about is what did Fisher and Paykel know about its dryer and how it responded to the situation? And what they knew, and this was the basis for the CPA claim, they knew that they had...
So not the ventilation system, but go ahead. The CPA claim.
The CPA claim, Fisher and Paykel, these exhibits 79 and 80 are the key exhibits with respect to the CPA claim. Fisher and Paykel had advanced knowledge that they had a high rate of failure of the thermostats. There's three thermostats inside this dryer. They turn the heating elements on. They're supposed to turn them off when they get too hot. They weren't working correctly. So these heating elements were getting overheated, and they were failing. And that's Exhibit 79, is the heating elements are failing. They're falling apart. So they know of this problem, and they do nothing about it, except when we get a service call from among these 69,000 dryers out there, that when we get one of these 1,800 anticipated failures, we'll replace the thermostats, and we'll replace the heating elements. We'll do it that way, instead of proactively saying, we have a problem, a safety problem, and we're going to go fix the problem before there's a catastrophe. And our expert, Mr. Fitz, who tested these dryers, could never, ever get the fail-safe thermostat to trip. It was operating at far higher temperatures than are safe. It never worked. So that's the CPA claim. That's what Fisher and Paykel knew, and that's what Fisher and Paykel failed to respond to, was that risk.
Not the buildup of the lint.
The buildup of lint is simply one reason for heating elements to overheat. The problem was they had these heating, the elements within the dryer overheating, and they knew their system didn't prevent that.
Without regard, that buildup of lint can be a factor, but the overarching claim related to the defective thermostat.
Exactly, because lint build or low airflow can happen for any number of reasons. It's a risk factor with dryers. They're often in sort of dirty circumstances. There's the lint. Ventilation systems vary from machine to machine depending on how they're installed. What you do is design the dryer to withstand those things. One way you do it is by making sure you have thermostats that work that turn off the heating element when it reaches dangerous temperatures. Here, we have testimony that it takes 2,500 degrees to get to where a heating element melts, and we had melted heating elements. It's a small point, but I need to point this out in the 30 seconds I have. Counsel suggested they're seeking a directed verdict on the real property damage issue. That's not what they briefed. They asked for a new trial on that on the basis that the jury was improperly instructed. So that's important.
You were going to address the argument about spoliation. They argue not only that the instruction should have been given, but that you then took advantage of the court's failure to give it unfairly in argument.
Well, I don't – what's unfair? Did we argue that the cause was the dryer and that there was no alternative cause suggested? Yes, we argued that. I don't know that that's unfair because in our view and in the view of the City of Kent's fire investigator, there was one cause, and it was the cause we put forth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Fritz Winiger, the fire investigator that came in immediately after the fire, never opened the dryer, never investigated a CPA claim, never checked the vent, never checked the presence of a sensor. He came in and did what he could do based upon what he saw. But if his report's important, what he said is there was a hot spot outside the dryer on the wall. If the fire starts inside the dryer, it burns up, not sideways. This fire started outside the dryer. That's what the evidence showed. He looked as far as he could, but that's as far as he could go.
The issue of what standard did the judge apply, I refer you to the record of proceedings, page 1195, where the judge says, to the contrary of argument, I think it is correct that I would need to find some intentional destruction of evidence in order to find spoliation. She applied the wrong standard.
Well, you would agree, though, there has to be some purposefulness to the destruction. I mean, that's the whole point. That's what the instruction says, essentially.
It does, but if you look at the facts here, what happened, we had a fire. The next day they concluded it was the dryer. Within 3 weeks, they sent us a letter saying, hey, we think it was your dryer was a cause. Please come and investigate. But if you don't respond by August 15th, we're going forward.
Mm-hmm.
We responded on the 5th. Said we want to get in there. We wanted to get there as early as possible. We were offered the 22nd. We had to fight to get there on the 20th. We looked at the dryer on the 20th. Contrary to counsel's argument, the record actually shows demolition happened before August 14th. By August 15th, it was fully demolished. The walls were taken down. The studs were sealed, and the electrician was in there to make his final bid to bid out and rebuilding the electrical system. This was demolished before we had a chance to look at the evidence, and that's our argument. For that reason, we would ask that the underlying court's decision be reversed for the reasons articulated in our brief. Thank you.
Thank you.